powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
And we've got Mike Salk in, as we do every single day. Mike, how many lives do you think are going to be changed as a result of this Super Bowl?
Thousands? Maybe millions.
Millions, I think.
Have you shared on the air how your life was changed as a result
Super Bowl 36? Super Bowls have changed my life a few times. Super Bowl 36, Patriots beat the Rams. Giant upset, right? Brady's first Super Bowl win. And my wife and I, now my wife, but at the time just a friend of mine, we'd been hanging out a little bit, but she was excited enough and ingested enough alcohol afterwards that she made out with me afterwards. So I thank the Patriots for it all the time. That was a big moment for me.
You know, if your local team wins the Super Bowl, you are likely to be in a position or a place where you aren't normally. Like, you're at a party.
Right.
Or you're a fan of the team. You're out. You're somewhere you wouldn't be, like, other than your house. So if your local team wins the Super Bowl, that is life-changing.
It can be. Well, look at what happened here. I mean, the difference between 2013 and 2014, I guess the Super Bowls that followed those seasons, it's a gigantic difference. I mean, think about, you know, the biggest party of all time after the 2013 Super Bowl win, what seemed like an endless drought, right, came to an end that night, which, by the way, was similar to that Patriots Super Bowl in 2001. You know, Boston teams were awful leading up to that, other than the Celtics. The Bruins hadn't won forever. The Red Sox were cursed. The Patriots were the worst franchise in probably football history. And then all of a sudden, everything kind of turns on a dime in that moment for a generation of people that had never seen their team win anything. Well, 2013 was very much that, other than the Sonics victory. It was the first one in forever, right? And it changes everything. So did the loss the next year. I mean, the way we know on this station, we saw what it did to our ratings. It plummeted our ratings on this station for over a year. I mean, like, that day.
People broke up with the Seahawks for a minute.
People broke up with us.
Yeah.
They broke
we
up
didn't
with the
do
station.
Anything.
Like, if you want to break up with the Seahawks, fine. They're the one who threw the stupid pass. But they broke up with us over it. It was terrible. And it took us a while to get everybody back together. So, yeah, I think Super Bowls can change people's lives depending on how they go, and they certainly can change the lives for the participants in them. I mean, look at what that first Super Bowl did to Tom Brady in propelling his career. Is it different if they kneel on the football instead of going for it at the, you know, with 52 seconds left or whatever it is to win that game? Does he fully become the GOAT if that doesn't go that way, right? How is it different in Atlanta? And how is Matt Ryan looked at differently? How is Dan Quinn looked at differently in his job security? Super Bowls can absolutely, and those are just a couple examples. How about Cam Newton? You think the Super Bowl changed Cam Newton's life?
Maybe. Yes,
1,000%.
Leading up to that Super Bowl, he was the greatest thing since sliced bread.
He was the man.
He was cocky, and he was talking to everybody, and they were nearly undefeated. And then the way his leg was, like, it all disappeared, not just by losing, but in that one moment where he didn't go after the ball that was on the ground.
And then pouting after the game.
Everyone pouts after.
You think about Scott Norwood. You think about Whitney Houston. There's Cam. Like, you can really go through not every Super Bowl, because some are just, you know, Stan Humphries just gets destroyed, or Neil O'Donnell throws 30 picks. But there's a lot of Super Bowls that do significantly change people's lives. One of them changed the entire culture of this country. And that's the Janet Jackson.
The wardrobe malfunction.
The wardrobe malfunction. Think about what happened in this country after that, and the way censorship came. I mean,
or the way that Janet Jackson's career was ruined. Can we talk about that?
Totally fair.
We don't have to talk about it. It's a sports radio station, but I would just like to say Justin Timberlake was part of that performance too.
Yeah, but nobody. I couldn't even remember who it was.
Yeah.
Couldn't even think of his name.
Yes.
So things can absolutely hinge and change, and lives can change based on the results and the way Super Bowl plays out. And I think that's because the entire country's watching together. It's one of the only things we all do. We do it in different ways and in different places. And some people watched carefully, and some people care about the halftime show or the commercials or the party they're at. But the Super Bowl is one of the more unifying things in this country that everybody experiences together. And because of it, yes, absolutely, lives are changed.
So what is the anticipated storyline that you think is going to come out of this game? You look at, you know, you talk about, you know, so many people are watching and the impact that it has. What is this anticipated storyline that you think is coming? You know, you look at Patrick Mahomes, you look at this 49er defense, Kyle Shanahan, Andy Reid, all of that. What do you think's coming?
I think the Chiefs are going to win. At least I'm speaking with my heart. So I think the Chiefs are going to win because I want them to win, and I'm hoping that that plays out the way I want. And if that's the case, I think the person I'll be happiest for is Andy Reid, a guy who's been there before, lost a close Super Bowl where a lot of that was, talk about lives being changed, that was on him and Donovan McNabb at the end of that game and their complete inability to hurry up and get down the field when it was necessary. Andy Reid, if he can manage to not screw up the timing at the end of a game, which is the biggest knock on him, it ends an incredible career of everything but. So I hope that if they win, he is a huge part of the story. The second part, obviously, will be Patrick Mahomes and the way they took a chance on this kid. A kid that, by the way, the Seahawks had interest in. And if he had fallen a little bit later into that draft, he would have been backing up Russell Wilson. And eventually we would have had one of the more bizarre quarterback controversies here you ever could have had. Because they did like him. It was legitimate. It wasn't just trying to put some pressure on Russ. It was just looking at him and saying, this kid is too incredibly good to let him keep falling. So, I think Patrick Mahomes seems like a great kid. I just couldn't be happy. If someone's going to take on part of the mantle of being the face of the league and all that, he sure seems up for the challenge. So, yeah, I'll be really happy if the Chiefs win. If the Niners win, I might not come in for a few days. I'd be too upset.
Do you think the 49ers have anything to lose in this game?
I think any team that loses the Super Bowl has something to lose.
Okay.
We just see it every year. The Super Bowl losers have a really hard time getting back to the playoffs. And that's one of the things that makes the 2015 Seahawks so impressive, is not just being Super Bowl loser, but losing in such dramatic, heartbreaking fashion to get back to the playoffs the next year and the year after that. And, oh, by the way, suffering the Russell Wilson injury in there also. It's a remarkable feat, and one of the reasons I laugh and scoff at any of the Pete Carroll ideas, because that is leadership in getting his team back after you lose a Super Bowl. Go check the numbers on how many Super Bowl losers don't make the playoffs the next year.
It feels like almost all of them in the last 20 years.
There's something about getting all the way to the peak of that mountain and then falling off and staring back up and going, wait, I got to go climb back up again, that breaks teams. The salary cap gets tight on them. The great players that have emerged over the course of their Super Bowl run all want to get paid or all want the credit. I mean, you pick late in the draft, which I know we've talked about can be a real challenge year after
somebody
year.
Somebody else in your division gets good because they finished last the year before.
Or somebody who was good, like the Rams, end up coming back because they've shaken off the yoke of what happened in their Super Bowl hangover. So, yeah, teams that lose the Super Bowl, I think, generally have a real challenge in front of them, and I don't think the 49ers are going to be any different. Now, they've got some advantages. They've got a young franchise quarterback. They've got some great young players on their defense. I don't think they're going anywhere. But when you lose the Super Bowl, something seems to come over you. And if you do lose it in heartbreaking fashion, and now it's the entire narrative around your team, those things are hard to break. And by the way, if Richard Sherman's on that team and they lose in heartbreaking fashion, we've seen that he doesn't always handle those things particularly well.
That is true.
And if they should have done one thing and could have done another, he didn't mind throwing the blame around. So,
well, we know it won't be his fault.
How could it be? Even when it is his fault, it's not his fault. So, yeah, I would say whoever loses this Super Bowl has a difficult challenge ahead of them.
Now, we've talked about how you've wanted the Chiefs to win, and we've kind of played through that scenario and that the 49ers would have a challenge on their hands. But Tom here believes that we're walking into a remake of Super Bowl 48. You have this high-powered offense coming into town, and you've got one of the best defenses in the league with a tremendous pass rush like the Seahawks did in 2013, and that you're seeing a rematch of this. If that ends up happening, what does that do to the Seahawks organization? What does that do for Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and how they view
it's a huge
this next offseason?
I mean, look, it shows that their style and the mentality and the philosophy can still win, right? So for all of the, let Russ cook and throw the ball over the yard, it can still work doing it the Seahawks and Niners way, but it also shows you just how far behind them you are at trying to do that. So, right. Yeah, I mean, that situation, if that plays out that way, Jake, I don't think any of us can be totally surprised. How many times have we seen it where, you know, the high-flying, quick offense gets punched in the mouth right off the bat by the best defense in the league, and they just go into a shell and aren't able to find their way back? The other side of it, though, is, you know, they've sort of dealt with that. I mean, we saw what happened when they got down early, first to Houston and then to Tennessee, two fairly physical teams, especially the Titans. And they just fought their way right back out of it, right? We saw them beat a team like
you're talking about Kansas City.
Yeah, we saw them beat the Ravens earlier this year. That was a great game, came right down to the end. And that was another team that wants to bully you and push you around. And they absorbed those blows and ended up beating the Ravens. They're one of the few losses they had all year. So I think the Chiefs are capable of handling that kind of physical play. But, you know, I think it's going to be a really good Super Bowl. I would be shocked if this is more than a one-score game just based on how good both these teams are.
You say that a 49ers win would be a bummer and that it would also show Seahawks fans just how far you are behind the 49ers. But one thing I think you can say San Francisco did really well was this offseason making a couple key acquisitions to go from near the bottom of the league to being, you know, atop the league
sure.
in several defensive categories. Obviously, Seattle doesn't have a second overall pick. But do you think they have enough whatever it's cap space or draft capital to make that kind of single offseason change? Because I honestly didn't think they did. I thought it would take a while, but looking more at San Francisco's transformation, I kind of feel differently.
One word answer would be yes. I think they can. They have enough money in cap space and enough picks in the draft, enough capital, not to mention a franchise quarterback, that yes, they can absolutely go from good to great this offseason if they want to and if they make the right decisions. The San Francisco one is odd. Right. I mean, they're sort of a unique situation where they were building a contender around a franchise quarterback who got hurt in the first game of the year, and they played the rest of the season without a quarterback. I mean, I know they had Nick Mullins who did okay, but I mean, that's one of those odd situations, right, where you end up with this incredibly high draft pick and draft capital, even though you've already acquired your franchise quarterback and he didn't screw it up himself. He just got hurt for a year. So, yeah, I think the San Francisco situation is a bit of an anomaly, but I also think the Seahawks are perfectly capable with the capital they have to get right back to the top of the mountain next year.
Go ahead, Tom.
No, you go ahead. I got a different topic.
I was looking at it, and I was just sitting there saying it's interesting from that standpoint to look at this defense, as you've pointed out, Mike, and you look at this, the holes. Where are the holes? Depending on roster, you know, situations, decisions with what you do with KJ Wright, I mean, you're pretty much locked in with your linebackers and your secondary. You know, outside of one or two positions, it's really your defensive line where you have to make the transition.
Yeah, and we talked about that yesterday, right? Like, you guys asked me, okay, how do you take that defense and turn it back around? The answer is pass rush. I mean, you could use help at all levels of the defense, and especially, I think, if you found a top-tier shutdown corner, that would make a big difference. A playmaking safety would make a big difference. But nothing would change things more than getting somebody to be opposite Jadeveon Clowney or two people in addition to him to get after the passer. They didn't have it this year.
Mike, I know you're not the biggest basketball fan in the world. But
I can still cross you over if I need to. Don't you worry. I'll still post you up.
Oh,
wow, I'll still take you in the post, Tom.
Mike, it's not going to come to that.
Wait till you see the up and under move.
It won't. But like, you don't like college for one reason.
You don't like college.
I know you don't like the NBA. But would you watch basketball more if dunks were worth 3 points, threes that don't touch the rim are worth 4, you get a point deducted for missed free throws, and all field goals in the final 3 minutes of a game are worth 8 points?
No.
That's the wrong answer.
I don't think I would. But there's a couple of things I would do to change, especially the NBA more than college, but definitely the NBA. I would widen the court, and I would raise the basket. Those are the two things I would do to change the NBA more than anything.
It'd be harder to get a 3-point dunk. That's right.
You're making things a little complicated.
I would go the opposite way.
I would widen the court. The basketball court was not designed for people this size.
Yep.
The guys who play in the NBA are as freaky an athlete as you will find anywhere. They are so tall, they're so long, and their wingspan is so crazy. The game, I think, bunches up a little bit because they're enormous. They take up the whole half court. I don't think that when they created a 10-foot basket, they were expecting guys to be able to A, be that tall, and B, jump that high. that I rather than rewarding dunk after dunk, I would try to spread the game out a little bit. And yeah, I think at 11 feet, guys would still be able to dunk, but it wouldn't be every player in the league, and it wouldn't be every time down the court. A dunk would still be a dunk. It would still carry some level of wow factor.
In North Korea, isn't the court bigger?
I generally want to make the game as much like it is in North Korea.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Thank you, Mike. Now you're on board.
Now you're getting there.
This is the more rules in North Korea.
That's what the theme of our show is today.
North Korean basketball.
The more North Korea, the better.
710 ESPN Pyongyang.
All right. Well, now as we're transitioning to one more topic before we let you go.
Away from North Korea.
Away from North Korea. Bring us back to Seattle.
Let's see what Papa Doc's doing.
Shaquille Griffin stated that he wanted to ask the coaches. He was down at the Super Bowl for media days and all that, and he wanted to he said that he wants to go and ask the coaches to follow the number one receiver all across the field, and that, you know, that's his goal for this next year. I wonder, because there was criticism about Russell Wilson saying saying something about how they needed to add talent. Does that draw the same level of criticism, or should it, or is that a problem?
I don't criticize either one of them. I thought Russell was well within his rights to say what he said. I disagree with what Danny wrote, although I thought it was a well done column. I understand where he's coming from. 710sports.com. And I have no problems with Shaquille Griffin wanting to do that and wanting to ask the coaches. I don't know if they're going to say yes. I don't know that he's shown he's good enough for them to say yes. But I admire that that's what he wants to do, and that he wants to take on the most difficult challenges week in, week out. There's another cornerback here. I don't know whether he ever asked for that. He always seemed to be pretty happy being just on one side and playing a lot of three deep zone and everything that Richard Sherman did while he was here. So I admire Shaquille Griffin for that. I don't know if they're going to say yes, because that's not Pete's way of wanting to do things, but I got no problems with him asking. Now, if he starts pouting and throwing a fit because they say no, that's an issue, but that would surprise me. I got no issues with that.
Yeah,
I
generally don't, but when you look at it, I love the fact that he's asking for that.
Yeah.
But when you talk about this premise of putting your organization or your coaches on more of a spot, if they decide not to do that because they haven't done that for a decade,
that's fair.
Now fans are going to be saying, see, Shaq wanted to do it. Shaq wants to do it.
Fans are going to say that anyway, though. I mean, you know, anytime anything doesn't work, fans get mad and look for stuff to blame. And I think Pete is in enough of a position of security in his life that he doesn't have to worry about that stuff. So I don't know. That seems pretty minor to me. Shaquille Griffin wants to go out and do better. He's competitive. He wants the challenge. And as long as that's the impetus behind a comment like that, I think that's all good.
That's what everything comes down to in life. If you've got enough security, you don't have to worry about what anybody thinks.
It's about leverage, Tom. Just ask North Korea.
Make as much money as you can, and you don't have to care about what anybody else thinks. That's the life lesson from the Tom, Jake, and Stacey show today. What do you think?
I think that's
a pretty
good life lesson, and I think something everybody should aspire to try and do.
All right, we're going to do what's on tap, because we have a crazy quote coming from Radio Row down at the Super Bowl. Go ahead.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
This comes from 97.3 ESPN in South Jersey. They follow me, by the way, just so everybody knows.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Nice. Big
nice
deal.
Little feather in your cap, Tom.
All right.
They're in Atlantic City. Yeah, okay.
Toot, toot.
It says, talking with Lee Steinberg. Everybody know who he is? He's a very, very famous sports agent. He's actually the guy that Jerry Maguire was based on. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that movie? Stacey, even you?
I know of it.
Okay. He was asked about his client, who was Tua Tagovailoa. Asked if he wants to go number one in the upcoming NFL draft. His quote, "You want to make sure that your client ends up with a good organization. I'm hoping Cincy falls in love with Joe Burrow."
Shots fired.
Wow.
And here's the thing. Is he wrong? Absolutely not. He is not wrong for those statements right there.
It's really that bad in Cincinnati?
Yes.
God, they've done a lot of winning, though. I mean, I know that the owner's cheap and that generally it's not been a great organization, but they've won a lot there over the past decade.
And that's the other part of it, though, when you talk about Marvin Lewis, is that actually he's a pretty dang good coach. And the fact that he was able to win and have as many successful years there in Cincinnati, you know, that people are looking at and going, how come he's not getting another job consideration anywhere else? I mean,
good point.
Honestly. So, you know, before that, I mean, they haven't done a whole lot of winning. So it's a pretty dysfunctional organization, and it's not an organization that a lot of players find themselves fortunate to be in.
Tua's agent, quote, "You want to make sure your client ends up with a good organization. I'm hoping Cincy falls in love with Joe Burrow." And there you have it.
Cincinnati's ownership is like, oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
To spite you, we are going to draft you first. Or right. Joe Burrow's like, what did I do?
Right. We drafted him.
Got him.
Love that.
Geez.
Wow. That
we're just out of spite.
Fire.
We're going to draft him. Yeah, well, you'll see. We'll fix you.
That's right.
You'll
keeping
see.
It real. That's why, you know, when people are asking about Jacob Eason, you know, should he come out? Should he not? He's actually in a pretty good position right now when you look at it from the draft standpoint. If he takes care of business, it's a situation where he'll fall down later in the first round, and there's probably going to be a competitive market for him to probably trade up into the first round to try and snag him. So that's where it all becomes very interesting when you look at it for Joe Burrow. Can Joe Burrow, as much as we all really like him, is he a guy that can go into that organization, Cincinnati, and change everything? And that's a really tough task for any player to step in as a young quarterback and say, all right, I'm going to change all of everything around me. I'm going to change the dysfunction in the organization. I'm going to overcome the fact that we don't have a very good defense and that we don't have a run game on offense. I mean, there's a lot of things that Joe Burrow, if he gets picked, it's going to be tough.
He's going into the same situation that like Josh Rosen went into, which is one that he couldn't fix even if he could play.
See, that would be the hard part about being a top draft pick is, you know, yes, you get the honor of doing that. You get way more money than you normally would. But then you go into an organization that's probably unstable and you're going to need to do a lot. And there have obviously been top picks that have worked out and that have been franchise changers. But it's also because those were better run organizations that made other important moves.
That is correct.
The Bengals started off 0-11 this year before they finally won a game. You guys remember who their closest game was with, don't you?
I sure do.
Who's that, Stace?
Seattle.
Seattle Seahawks beat them 21-20 opening day.
And they got after us. Like, the Seahawks were able to win the game, but, man, Cincinnati made it hard. I mean, they looked like
Andy Dalton had over 400 yards.
They looked like one of the toughest defenses in the league. They looked like they had one of the best defensive lines that we've seen in quite some time. And that certainly wasn't the case.
We have a really strange quote from Andy Reid, but it makes him sound so sweet.
I like it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
We're going to go through some NFL headlines here. Somebody's going to have to translate this quote for me, though, because I don't get it.
I can do that.
Andy Reid says his grandkids both keep him young but make him feel old, kind of like sweet and sour pork.
Yeah, it's when something you love also hurts you sometimes.
Oh.
You know?
That's deep.
Like, yeah, it is really deep because it's like, yeah, you love it. There's a sweet side, but then there's a sour side to it that's like, oh, you know, there's a little bit of a kick, a little bit of a tart feeling, but then there's the sweetness of it. I get it. I get where he's coming from.
He's like, you know, it's the best of both worlds.
All of his analogies should be food analogies.
he's got younger grandkids and realizes how old he is, but then also, you know, the relationships that he gets to build with them.
The point is, Andy Reid, everything in his life gets compared to some food, hopefully, and this one is sweet and sour pork.
Right. I love Andy Reid.
I didn't realize that he had become such a beloved character in the NFL. We talked about this maybe a couple of days ago. I mean, Salk said it, you said it.
Yeah.
Like, when did he become like Santa Claus?
He's just likable. Some people are just likable.
I never once thought, look at this. My team, the Giants, played the Eagles twice a year, every year since he was a coach there in 2099. Every year for about 13 years, I never once heard anybody say that Andy Reid is a likable guy.
Well, you were a Giants fan.
But I never even heard them say it.
Well, they're Eagles fans.
Right. I think everybody from everybody else really liked Andy Reid and appreciated Andy Reid for him and his personality.
Except his team and his rivals.
That's correct.
Or his fans, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some fans appreciated Andy Reid, but, you know, when they were winning.
Okay.
But since he's been to Kansas City, and I think that social media has come out, and he's done some funny, you know, skit videos and stuff like that with Eric Stone Street and stuff like that, it opens people up to him.
I pray that he's not in a situation at the end of the game where he has to make some big sort of clock decision that's going to just be the ruination of him once again.
Yeah, that would be hard.
Actually, I pray that he is in that situation. I want to see him manage
make
it well.
Make the right choice.
Yes.
Redemption.
Yes. Dak Prescott says he remains confident he'll re-sign in Dallas.
Look, the Dallas Cowboys, I don't think they're in any other position than to give Dak Prescott a contract. Now, what that contract looks like is going to be the big question here. And, you know, there was reports that he wanted $40 million. I don't think he's going to get that. And the fact that he's still trying to push to get over Russell Wilson is still a tough ask. But ultimately, it's what the market is the market.
Yeah, isn't that what generally happens? You get more than the last guy.
It generally is. And I think the Dallas Cowboys are trying to push against that. But I don't really think they have much of a choice heading into the situation.
Yeah, what else are they going to do? Reactivate Jason Garrett? Oh, no, wait, the Giants are...
Well, there have been guys that have signed since Russell Wilson that have signed for less.
Less money, that's
Jared
true.
Goff. So I would imagine that they'll make it something more comparable to those contracts
who
as
do you
opposed
like,
to Russell Wilson.
Sure. Who do you like better, Dak or Goff, in their own offenses?
Dak. I would take Dak, yeah.
The Cowboys were a pretty good offense this year. It's just as a team, they didn't come together.
His leadership, you know, just overall, I would rather have Dak be my quarterback than Jared Goff.
Goff's got leadership.
Does he?
Yeah. He's got it.
I don't
Tom,
think so.
Tom, I think you're blinded by the light. No, you've got rosy glasses on because you are so obsessed with the Rams' sexual offense.
They have a sexual offense. Well, not in a while. They need some pills.
Oh, jeez.
You...
What?
No, I'm not going to make this transition yet. What's the next headline?
I don't know. Who are Russell Wilson's contemporaries at quarterback in the NFL? Now, this goes back to a conversation we've had a few times.
Yeah.
It seems like Russell Wilson is part of this lost generation of quarterbacks. Guys like RG3 and Andrew Luck, who are now out of the league for...
Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah. Was he part of that generation?
Yeah, remember, I read them all, you guys.
Yeah, but he never accomplished anything.
Exactly, but he was a first-round pick, though. He was a high first-round pick.
That's true. No, you're right.
So,
but Dalton would be in that group, too.
No, that is. So you've got... Okay, so Russell was 2012, so let's start with 11. 2011, Ryan Mallett, Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, Jake Locker, Blaine Gabbert, Colin Kaepernick. 12, Ryan Lindley, Andrew Luck, RG3, Ryan Tannehill, Brock Osweiler, Nick Foles, Kirk Cousins. 13, EJ Manuel, Geno Smith, Mike Glennon, Matt Barkley.
Oh.
There's no one really for him to be compared to. Matt Stafford is the closest guy in his age that's still a regular starter. Tannehill obviously became a starter this year, but had a setback where he was kind of backing someone up, and he had kind of a fall from grace in his career. I mean, I think part of the reason that he gets... There's a couple reasons that he is sometimes overlooked, even though I think he's widely considered, even outside of Seattle, to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But he's not part of a generation that's compared to something. You've got young guys, and then you've got the veterans, and then you've got this really weird thing that happened between 2011, 12, and 13, where a lot of quarterbacks failed.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's the exact reason why he's getting overlooked. I mean, you talk about a generation of quarterbacks that... you know, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, you put Aaron Rodgers in that category where they were widely considered top five for a long time. Even Russell Wilson putting up really strong numbers, like some of these guys like Deshaun Watson, some of those other guys, they weren't even coming close to being in the conversation of being top five because it was essentially locked for so many years. Now that those guys are getting older and finding their way close to out of the league. Now you've got this new wave of generation of, you know, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson. You got some of these guys that the media, they become media darlings or special talents, and Russell's just kind of been that guy that's been right in the middle of it all. And
But people are often compared to their peers, though, because even I know that there's something to be said for new guys coming in and people kind of falling in love with them. But I mean, think of how many times he was directly compared to Andrew Luck, Cam Newton, and even RG3 for a while. Like, those guys were kind of the matchup, right, and compared to each other for a couple different reasons. But how long was the Russell Wilson versus Andrew Luck debate kind of going on?
Yeah, I mean, their entire career until he retired.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Even maybe then, about 3 years. I mean, there was a Russell versus Cam Newton thing for maybe a year. And until Cam got hurt, actually, I'd say until he lost the Super Bowl, Cam always won that debate.
From a national perspective?
Yes. That's the point you're making, is that Russell was always overlooked. Cam Newton was not overlooked. He won an MVP. And until the point he self-destructed, then injuries took over.
Right.
Then Russell gets the nod.
To me, it'll be one of those things where I don't think Russell's going to be regarded in the same vein as like Drew Brees and Tom Brady and those guys until they move on and they're retired from the league. You know, he's going to be that him and Aaron Rodgers will essentially be that last group of guys that are considered the veterans that are amongst the top that will be in that top five conversation. So until that point, you know, there's always going to be controversy as to where ultimately he lands in people's eyes.
We're just getting a parade of quotes now. Is this all coming out of Radio Row?
It is quote season.
All right.
Marshall Faulk, Hall of Famer Marshall Faulk.
Oh, by the way, what? Most two-point conversions in a career. Forgot to tell you that.
Marshall Faulk?
Mm-hmm.
No kidding.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So does he have the most octopuses?
Yes, totally.
Wow, that's a weird coincidence.
Yeah, it is, right? I totally forgot it until you said his name just now. Okay, go ahead.
Well, he says that Christian McCaffrey is better than he ever was.
Wow.
Now, that's a heck of a compliment for Christian McCaffrey.
How many two-point conversions does he have?
Yeah, exactly. Well, how many octopuses do you have, Christian?
Okay, Christian.
Marshall Faulk, to me, is one of the biggest or best weapons the NFL has ever seen. He could catch passes.
Mm-hmm.
He was great as just a pure rusher. I mean, he could do everything in one of the best offenses that we've ever seen. Right?
Right.
I mean, there were options. There was Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Az-Hakeem, and Marshall Faulk. I mean, for him to put up the numbers he did, he was an unbelievable player. That's a heck of a compliment for Christian McCaffrey.
And it is, and I think with Faulk, probably the reason why he's saying that is all those players and all that star power you just rattled off, who's Christian McCaffrey playing with right now?
Devin Funchess?
Kyle Allen.
Is he gone?
Funchess is gone, yep.
What about Fozzie Whitaker? Remember that guy?
Yeah, he's a defensive player.
Fozzie Whitaker was a fullback.
Was he?
Yeah, he was a running back fullback, I thought.
Oh, shoot.
I'm just naming
your
Carolina offensive players.
Yeah.
But your point's taken.
Yes.
Yeah, DJ Moore.
Yeah, DJ Moore.
No, really, DJ Moore.
Yeah,
and then that's kind of it.
So, I mean, very impressive with what he was able to do in the running game and the passing game this year in every defense.
Jake, you may have played against Fozzie Whitaker. He went to the University of Texas.
Oh, yeah. Now that I think of it, I absolutely did. You're right.
Your boys. That's your guy.
Wasn't he short and stout?
Yeah, we shared the field together.
He's 5'10", 202.
There you go. Fozzie Whitaker. If your name's Fozzie, you can't be tall.
No?
Right? I don't think so. Fozzie the Bear.
I could see that being like a
who's
big
Fozzie
defensive
the Bear?
Tackle.
Stop it.
Why do you say that like I should know?
Fozzie the Bear? You don't know who Fozzie the Bear is?
I've never met him.
When Stacy says things like this, how come nobody else jumps in?
Tom, that's always dealt with by you.
Really?
You've been kind of taking on that task. You've taken the bull by
the horns.
Who's
Fozzie the Bear?
It makes me look like a jerk.
No,
Don't you guys know who Fozzie the Bear is?
And also, no. we are younger. You know?
Kyle, do you know who Fozzie the Bear is?
I know Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear.
Stop it. What about you, DJ?
I know the bear in tennis shoes.
He's a Muppet, yes.
Why would I know a Muppet by name that wasn't Kermit or Miss Piggy? I don't even know her first name.
It's Miss, I think.
It was just Miss Piggy.
I guess there's also Ren and Ernie. Bert and Ernie.
Bert and Ernie.
Ren and Stimpy.
They're not Muppets, though. That's Sesame Street.
Well, you're going
Oh.
With.
what are the other Muppets?
Gonzo.
Yeah. Gonzo the from Muppet Man. Babies.
The garbage man with the cookies.
Oscar?
The Oscar cookie the monster? Cookie Monster.
Sesame okay. Street.
That's yes. Sesame Street.
Are these not the same?
I'll tell you what, this show needs to end and fast. Because we're embarrassing ourselves. You know, I actually have a question, something more embarrassing than all this. What do people who don't watch the Super Bowl do with themselves?
Watch the Puppy Bowl.
We sum it up next, 710 ESPN.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
I'm getting a lot of hate for this video of me running with the XFL helmet, Tom.
Because it's the XFL or because you're running?
It's because I'm running. And I don't have perfect form. And so, oh, wow. The Panthers and Greg Olsen parted ways.
Wow. Quick pivot there. Just to peel back the curtain also, we are missing Jake Heaps in studio. Now we come to the... this is always the question. Do I go find him, or is it better just to sit around and wait?
I think it's better to let him walk
How
in.
How long will he wait till you
arrive? Yeah, time
Coors Light, Coors Light's text line, 710-710. The countdown starts now. When does Jake walk in the room? Best guess wins. You win nothing.
You win
except
nothing.
For my respect and appreciation. He's still not in here, so.
I thought it was pretty funny last segment how in about 10 seconds we went from talking about Russell's contemporaries to the Muppets.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome. And Stacey still doesn't know who Fozzie the Bear is.
No, people texted in to let me know. Here's Jake, by the way.
Jake's back!
Hey!
249.30.
All right. Yeah. If you had 249.30, you were correct.
What were you, getting a drink of water?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Okay.
I want to know what people who don't observe the Super Bowl in any way, what are you doing on Sunday? I mean, as Mike Salk said... The Super Bowl is a ritual. It's something that we all participate in together as a country. Like, even if you're not into football, maybe you end up at a Super Bowl party. You're just hanging out. Or you're aware of the game, something like that. Isn't it a little weird if you're just disconnected from that entirely?
And that it's a huge day. It's almost basically like a holiday.
Yeah, it's a bigger deal than the federal election, when you think about how many people don't vote. I mean, more people watch the Super Bowl than vote.
That's sad.
That's insane.
No, it's great. Actually.
It's great. It's one of those things where I look at it, and one, I can't relate, so I don't know what you would be doing or what the attitude would be like, but it's one of my favorite times. You spend time with family, friends, have some of the best some of the best food.
Super Bowl,
right?
The best.
Super Bowl food is awesome.
Because Super Bowl food is all appetizers all the time.
Yes.
That's why it's amazing.
You
can eat so many different foods.
What's your favorite Super Bowl appetizer?
Wings.
Wings?
I was going to say wings, too.
Yeah?
You know what? I actually read a stat yesterday. It said something about the number of avocado injuries that happen
avocado
on Super Bowl
injuries?
Sunday because people cut into the avocado with a knife, right? And they end up slicing their hand.
Yeah, there's an uptick in guacamole production.
Guacamole, that's right.
So they use the avocado to make the guacamole.
Right.
And every year on Super Bowl Sunday, ER visits for hand cuts
go
through the roof.
Whoa.
And all these people have to say, yeah, I was cutting an avocado.
My father actually went to the ER on Super Bowl Sunday one time.
For the same thing?
It wasn't avocado. I'll have to ask him what it was. I thought it had something to do with the wings, actually. But yeah, at halftime of Super Bowl 25, Giants-Bills, we took him to the ER. I didn't go because I was watching the game. But we took him to the ER specifically.
Too much.
Well, the Giants won that game, man.
Oh, the Giants. I'm sorry. I totally misheard that part of the story.
No, exactly. But yeah, he was one of them.
Someone from the 206 said, I go fishing. No one out there. That's true. If you had to run errands or go to the mall... Or go somewhere where there would normally be a lot of people, I bet the crowd is like cut in half at least.
Shouldn't the malls be closed?
Federal holiday?
National holiday, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That part of it would be convenient in that sense. But
I mean, people who aren't religious celebrate Christmas.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's people that are just maybe not even casual football fans that still attend Super Bowl parties.
Yeah, that's what
right?
I mean.
Yeah, I mean, It would be interesting. I mean, for me, I look forward to my wife's buffalo chicken dip that she makes every year. I mean, that is so good.
Buffalo chicken dip.
Buffalo chicken dip.
And you dip what in it?
You could dip
anything.
Chips, bread, whatever
more
you
buffalo
want.
Chicken?
Yeah.
Yeah, smart play buffalo by Jake. Chicken, dip it in there.
Because as we learned in this time frame, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, this is the window when Brooke is probably listening.
Jake is like,
my wife's buffalo chicken
because
dip.
The other day, let's Dang not it. Forget, roll the tape.
Kyle,
Jake started the segment by talking about how he basically threw Brooke under the bus, and Brooke had to text in and say, no, not my fault.
And she texted in right when we went to break.
Exactly.
And we missed
a little too late. Little too late.
Looks like we had some truth-telling coming from the Heaps household.
Well, Kyle, you caught on to me, my friend.
And boy, my wife's...
It's amazing. Let me tell
but
you
But it
what.
Is not a false statement.
Oh, I believe
so
that.
So good. So good.
I mean, it's so nice of you to offer to bring it in for us on Monday. Like, that's
amazing. And fruit dip, by the way.
And fruit dip.
I don't want any of that.
Oh, you trust me. You would want some of this.
Nah.
Yes.
You guys, we're going to be eating good on Monday.
By the way, this you said Greg Olsen and the Panthers are splitting. He just wrote a four-page tweet thanking everybody. Isn't that overdoing it a little bit?
Not necessarily. I mean, he's had a story.
Did he leave Cam Newton out of the thank yous?
I don't see his name in
That would be interesting.
Pulled what we call the Doug Baldwin.
Ah, that would be interesting. For Greg Olsen, now, is this meaning that he's going to retire, or they're just...
I don't know. I can't read it while I'm on the air, really, but it's 4 pages long. It seems a little excessive. Hmm.
Yeah.
If he's not retiring, I mean, he's been injury-prone, but
yeah.
I'd like to have that guy.
One more day into the Super Bowl. We are back tomorrow to talk about it on 710 ESPN Seattle.